Generation Goat, number 28. I'm John Martin, and with me is E. Christopher Clark.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. We're back 3 weeks in a row.
I know. Yeah, last week after after we ended, I think I looked, and there have been a number of times we've done 2 weeks in a row. At least two or three times we've done 2 weeks in a row, but I don't think we've ever done 3 weeks in a row.
It's pretty epic.
Yeah.
So for the probably none of you that are listening... Yes.
Indeed.
Personal milestone achieved.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why it took us this long to do three in a row, but...
Because, it's kind of boring.
Yeah. It takes some convincing for us to step in front of this and go, what are we going to talk about?
It's true. We've been sitting here for, I don't know, a good hour since you came back from snow plowing.
Snow plowing, salt mine...
No, that's handy, actually, because you can carry out the rocks from the salt mine in your pockets.
And this then just is
like,
true.
Like in, you know, that, what is that, the Great Escape?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm just going to say yes for...
I don't know. There are Nazis, and they're kind of like Huggins Heroes-esque, and yeah, anyway.
Yeah, so the jobs all work together. It's a cohesive lifestyle that I lead.
So, well done.
But, you know, in terms of looking for things to talk about this week... Like, one thing stood out, and that was the Avengers trailer.
It's pretty awesome, right?
Yeah, I mean, I watched it, I gotta say, like, 6 or 7 thousand times in a row. No, like, 6 or 7 times in a row before I finally got to grading papers and things on Wednesday afternoon.
Ugh, grading. Yeah, I was grading this week, too. It looks great. And, the most amazing thing still, to me, is that... This movie actually makes me care about characters I have no reason to like.
Yes.
Based on my own experience with their actual comic books.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I find it interesting that it makes characters who even I didn't but...
Hawkeye?
Yeah, that's what
really?
I'm saying. Like, Hawkeye, given he does not have the silly mask that he wore traditionally in the comics.
I mean, that Green Arrow knockoff kind of guy. I mean, seriously.
But Black Widow, redhead. So I mean, we know they're with me. Automatically like the character, and she was in the very first book I ever bought with my own money, Uncanny X-Men 268. She was in a team up with Captain America and Wolverine. So I've always been interested in that character.
That edition somewhere.
Yeah, but it's a great book. We should come back to that. First books and whatnot. Mm. So I dig her, but she's not somebody that I'd go seek out a story about.
Yeah.
I thought Scarlett Johansson did a really good job in Iron Man 2. And the scene with her and Happy going through the Hammer Industries there towards the end of Iron Man 2, one of my favorites, because just watching what an actual fist fight would look like as opposed to a superhero fist fight, and then her taking out everybody so easily. I mean, that these characters, we care about them all. I wasn't even a huge Hulk fan. I liked the TV series, you know, Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno, like, there was a certain charm to that.
I have vague memories of it. Like, I think it was on the same evening as, Dukes of Hazzard, maybe, when I was little.
Yeah.
Or it might have been on the same day as Greatest American Hero. So yeah, I kind of like vague memories of it.
I remember watching it in reruns more than the early days when it would have still been on when we were kids. But yeah, I mean, it had a certain charm to it. Like the truth about the Avengers is, aside from Iron Man, who I had more interest in than I actually read, like individually they were never all that interesting.
It's true, right? I mean, Captain America, the Hulk, Thor. Yeah, these are all characters whose books, it seemed, for the longest time are, like, locked in the Golden Age, right? Like, there's a certain, like, effort to keep these, like, classic comic characters.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, I always gravitated towards the X-Men, and then X-Force, and, like, the New Mutants books were really good. And but because they took more chances. Mm. Like, the X-Men weren't as, like, those books weren't as focused on keeping these characters, you know, kind of traditional.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you got more kind of inventive storytelling, particularly with the New Mutants books, which were really good. And,
Of course, the downside with X-Men staying current and a downside with Marvel's efforts to stay current were things like Luke Cage and Dazzler. But Luke Cage of sort of on the Avengers side and Dazzler on the X-Men side.
I see your Dazzler, I raise you a Scarlet Witch.
Yeah.
You know? Or Avengers West Coast.
Yeah.
Which
was
kind of their like effort to have their own Excalibur and be like, you know, spiky and cool.
Right. Yeah, no, I... So,
which I did actually read for a while.
Yeah, Excalibur was one of those ones that always seemed cool, but I never picked up. I remember you being one of those people that picked up Excalibur a bit.
Yeah, it was alright. It was it wasn't bad. For a while there, it was pretty entertaining.
Yeah.
I read Avengers West Coast, sadly.
That's where Iron Man was for a really long time. He was West Coast Avengers. That was one. I probably have a couple issues of that. Avengers was one of the ones that I picked up pretty early. And what I loved about Avengers, the same thing I loved about Uncanny 268, was the idea that characters crossed over. Like, that all of these people existed in the same universe, like, blew my mind.
And then Marvel realized how much you loved it, and once a summer, all the books crossed over.
Oh my god. And I was a sucker for that, and I've still been...
Infinity Crusade, and the 2099 thing.
Well, 2099 was, like, an ongoing thing. Like, they did, like, three or four books, all set in the future. And,
but then, it was in every book.
Yeah.
Carnage was involved somehow.
Man, I mean, they were especially in the era, the early to mid 90s that we read, like, they were obsessed with, they found something that worked and they ground it into the ground.
See,
like,
also Venom. Well, yeah. I think I read somewhere recently online that Venom is a good guy in one of the Spider-Man series at the moment.
Yeah, well, the Venom, I mean...
What now?
Yeah, so my understanding of...
I'm the evil alien symbiote who's sociopathic and just wants to kill everything.
My understanding of how Venom's working now is they got... there's a couple of interim steps. So, like, Venom started off as the black suit that Spider-Man wore after the Secret Wars, for those of you keeping track, right?
Finds him in a little pool on the planet.
Yeah. So then he comes back. He wears the suit for a while. Things don't go well. Mary Jane doesn't like it. He gets rid of the black suit. The black suit eventually finds a friend in this... I don't know if he's a photographer, reporter, Eddie Brock, right?
Yeah.
Eddie Brock is our traditional classic Venom. He's a rival of Peter Parker's, and the two of them together are kind of nutty. Well, I guess at one point... I don't know when, it was at a point where I wasn't reading anymore, Eddie lost the suit, and the suit went to, of all people, the guy who used to be the Scorpion, like that old, Spider-Man villain, the Scorpion, Mac Gargan, I think is his name, somehow got his hands on the suit. So he was Venom for a good long while. And then it was one of the recent events where somehow Norman Osborn, the Green Goblin, gets control of the government's security forces.
As you do.
Forces.
Yeah.
He is employing that new Venom, and then eventually he has his downfall. So the new Venom is part of sort of the government, Norman Osborn's version of the Avengers. Masquerading as Spider-Man.
Man, they just don't make him like the Sinister Six anymore.
So when Osborn falls, I think they take back the suit. So getting around to the point, and they give the suit to Flash Thompson, another older wow. Spider-Man character.
Wow.
And he's the reason that you hear about Venom being sort of a good guy. So what they discovered is if you. Anyway.
Okay. All right. No. Okay.
That was a very visual moment where, like, people on the podcast can't see this. John's ready to interject. I'll finish really quickly. They discovered, I believe, that, and somebody can write in and tell me that I'm wrong about this.
Somebody could just write in, period.
They could. That if you don't wear the suit for too long. Like, that there's a point at which you can still basically maintain your own personality, your own sanity, and after that point, they'll take it away from you and give it to someone else. I think that's how it was going to work, but...
This is what I was getting at, because if all it took to make Venom useful and, you know, helpful was a good guy to wear it, Peter Parker is a good guy.
He is a good guy.
So, what the hell? way to go, guys.
Yeah. So, yeah.
What happened to Carnage in all this?
Well, yeah, okay. Carnage was... I forget how... I can't even remember. I mean, Carnage was a...
Kids was the spawn of Venom.
Right, yeah. So he... Not the spawn in terms of the spawn.
Yeah, like it was somehow the suit, like, does a thing. And Carnage was, like, completely psychopathic. Yeah. Hated and wanted to kill everything. Which led to a Venom Spider-Man working together.
Series. Right, because they both didn't like this one dude. Cletus Cassidy, something like that. Oh my goodness. Today in class I was marveling about the stupid things that stick funny. In my brain.
Yeah. Marvel. Yes. See what you did there.
I did without even intending it. How did we get anyway? But right. Obscure characters, and obscure characters are kind of what the Avengers eventually trafficked in. So the Avengers started off with Cap. Well, they didn't start off with Cap. First three or four issues, Captain America wasn't there. No. And it was Iron Man, Giant Man, the Wasp, Thor.
Yeah.
Those were your, and the Hulk. And they were fighting Loki, which is interesting. So they brought Loki back into the whole fold by making him the villain in this Avengers movie. And eventually Captain America comes on board in kind of the same way that we're seeing it right. take place in the movies. But then over time, like pretty much anybody becomes an Avenger. Like if you're like a, you know, sometimes it was the big people, but very often, especially towards the time you and I were reading it, like the Avengers over the time we were collecting, I don't know, did you read Avengers?
A little bit.
Yeah. It was one of the first ones that I subscribed to like direct from Marvel, but it was all second, third tier characters at that point.
Yeah. Hey, who's that? Oh, that's
Black Panther.
Dazzler. She's been here for like 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I guess she's an Avenger.
You know, that was like their speciality, was like putting together like the most random people.
Fantastic Four was kind of like that too, to be honest. They had a lot of second rate characters.
Yeah, like whenever one of them would drop out for some reason, as like a change of pace, somebody would pop in there. She-Hulk was a member of the Fantastic Four for a while.
Yeah.
It wasn't until the late 90s, 2000, more of the 2000s, 2000s, they decided, let's bring, like, the top-tier people together. And they went one step further, not just bringing back your core Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, but they were like, why the hell hasn't Spider-Man ever been an Avenger? Why hasn't Wolverine ever been an Avenger? So they went and actually did what they...
I just can't see Wolverine on the Goody Two-Shoes team.
Yeah, he's been there.
How the mighty have fallen.
He's been there for a while, but there's a really interesting storyline, and it's been a month or so since I've picked anything up, because the comic book store I've been going to moved out of the mall and doesn't even have a permanent location anymore, at least for the time being. But anyway, so there was...
It's just an itinerant comic book store in a van.
Yeah.
Like Christian Slater and Pump Up the Volume. Yeah. This is kind of like wandering around.
There's a movie I need to revisit.
Meet me at the football field at midnight for comics.
What was his name
in that movie? Harry something?
Harry Hardon.
Right.
Yeah, Happy Harry Hardon.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So there's a... I think I've mentioned it on the... Maybe... I don't know if I've mentioned it. No, I've mentioned it in a car ride, which I somehow thought was a podcast. It's funny how I think all of our conversations are podcasts. There's this book called Wolverine and the X-Men, which has a lot of the classic feel of the X-Men, where the last issue that I read, there was this thing going on where it was a... he's leading this dark life where he's leading X-Force, or he's part of the latest version of X-Force, which is apparently the best book Marvel puts out right now.
Really?
It's actually called Uncanny X-Force, this latest version.
Interesting.
And it's apparently the book to read, and I don't. But Wolverine and the X-Men is dealing with the fact that he's trying to run the school now. He's trying to, you know, love of his life, Jean Grey, has been dead for a number of years, and he restarted the school for the X-Men in her name, and he's trying to be the goody two-shoes, but he's also leading this other life of leading X-Force, which, as has always been, is kind of this elite but deadly force.
I hear stuff like that, and I really want to read it, but
yeah.
For every now and again, like on my iPod, which is a small screen, admittedly, and somewhat frustrating, but I read name it straight out of my head, the Joss Whedon X-Men series.
Astonishing X-Men.
Yes. And it was great. But every now and again, I wish that one of those apps would allow you to just, like, have access to the run of something, you know, because...
Yeah.
Why not?
Well, you know? Yeah, I'm frustrated with what Marvel and DC have done digitally.
Because they cost about the same, maybe a tiny bit less than the books.
And, yeah. You know. I mean, I think that there was a period there, probably again, early 2000s, where they put out whole runs of Uncanny, of Fantastic Four on a number, like two or three DVDs or whatever it would be.
Right.
And they still haven't made all of... So obviously they've got digital copies of the issues if they put them onto that, but they haven't made all of them available. They make them available piecemeal through their Marvel app or their DC app, and now they've just started releasing everything day and date, but there's all that archive, you know?
Right.
Like, I would love to be able to read the whole...
I can crack open the boxes to read some stuff, but strangely enough, I can't just grab my old copy of Action Comics where Superman shows up.
It would be nice if they would get with the program digitally, those guys.
It'd be nice, and it would make sense. I mean, a subscription service like Spotify, you know, in a fashion for comics, you know, where you could just kind of go in and say, today I want to read 70s X-Men.
Right, and then the thing is, like, they'll say, oh, well, we do that, but it's not complete. Like, you can go looking for specific runs, and maybe you'll find them, but then you'll find, like...
They'll put out graphic novels of the interesting stuff, like Days of Future Past. You know, there's a graphic novel of that for the X-Men.
Right.
But there's not a graphic novel for 70s X-Men when you just want to see ridiculous disco characters.
Yeah, no. And I mean, who doesn't want six issues of Dazzler?
Every now and again. Really? She had her own book for a little while.
She did.
I
am stunned that she's not, like, dead. You know, like, they have found ways, at least in Uncanny X-Men before they basically canceled Uncanny X-Men at, like, 500, 600 issues. And then restarted it with a number one, which, like...
Wait a minute.
Anyway.
They couldn't get that high.
It is 500 something.
I bought 281 in 92, I want to say.
Yeah.
Because I remember this because it had a misprinted label.
Oh, maybe it wasn't 500.
Maybe like 400?
I feel like it was 500 something. But I might be
12
wrong.
A year. That's... Well.
Well, there have been a number of times where they've done like the bi-weekly...
That's true. Write in and tell us, Dan.
There was a period where they were trying to make Dazzler relevant again. So she was... They moved all the X-Men to San Francisco, to this island off of San Francisco, and Dazzler was
the Rock.
And Dazzler was like a nightclub singer in San Francisco that you sometimes saw pop up.
Sure.
I mean, the fact that they still try to make, you know, there's a character that needs to appear in X-Men First Class Part 2.
Marvel,
when they get to the 70s, I mean, come on.
She'll have to be there. Apparently they're getting very close to starting that, which I'm very excited about.
Well, I mean, they better. I mean, Fassbender is... who played Magneto, is his star is rising, and I mean, I'm sure he's already contracted to do it, but, and of course...
I think if Ian McKellen will do it.
Yeah. Well, and McAvoy's star is rising is too, but it seems like they enjoyed that movie. It seems like everyone who was a part of that movie really enjoyed it.
It was great.
And it was definitely the best comic book movie of last year, by a long shot. I mean, I enjoyed...
Sorry, Thor.
I enjoyed Cap and Thor, but... they were setup movies for the Avengers.
That's really what it is. They feel very much like Attack of the Clones, where it's kind of like, I mean, except that they were pretty good. you know, where they are kind of like, yeah, we have a plot, but you know we're gonna live, you know we're gonna win, and we'll have a much better plot next year.
Yeah.
Come check it out.
Yeah, well, and I mean, it all that sort of circles back. I still think we should talk more about comics and stuff that we...
We're not talking about comics?
Well, no. Comics that we picked up when we were younger. First comics and stuff like that. But I want to circle back real briefly, because in terms of the Avengers trailer, at least from the trailer, it seems as if everything that's been set up is paying off here, and that this is not just another... like, set up for the next chapter. I imagine there'll be some of that, probably in that teaser scene after the credits.
We know they're working on a Cap sequel. We know there's a Thor sequel.
We know there's an Iron Man 3.
And apparently a Nick Fury movie.
Which would be, I mean,
come on.
Sam Jackson as Nick Fury in a movie of his own?
Done.
Yeah, done.
Sold.
Absolutely.
But, yeah. I kind of am worried that, because we know, like you say, Iron Man 3 as well. And... what I'm worried about is that the next series of movies will be about setting up Avengers 2.
Yeah.
Which could work, but on the other hand, you might get a weak-ass Thor movie.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I think...
I kind of want some of them to have stakes on their own.
You know, yeah, maybe? I want to see a great Iron Man 3. I mean, not to get off the Marvel track, but what I want to see is a great third part. And that's what I'm hoping for with The Dark Knight Rises.
There's nothing to worry about with that.
Yeah,
that is done.
I just want to see...
That movie is going to rule.
I want to see a great trilogy where every single part of it holds together.
It would be the hugest choke in history, you know?
But, I mean, like, you're not worried about Bane at all?
No.
Like, no?
Not worried about it.
Catwoman?
I'm fine.
Yeah? All right.
It's Anne Hathaway in a cat suit.
Well, I'm not worried about looking at her. I'm just worried about...
I mean, like, come on, people.
All right. So maybe we'll come back to DC in a second. I think we could do a whole episode on Dark Knight Rises when it gets closer, too. Mm-hmm. One of the things I loved about the trailer was seeing various sort of, for lack of a better word, hero shots of, like, three or four of them together. I mean, the best shot. Well, let me see.
Were you one of those weird online conspiracy people who was like, maybe they're not all in the same movie. Maybe they were all in different parts of the movie.
I think I mentioned this on one of the last...
Of course they're all going to go in the same room.
Well, yeah, no, I think I mentioned it on the podcast that I had heard rumors that they weren't filming together all that much.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, there was the Ain't It Cool guys the other day were like, it's not very cinematic. We've seen the movie. Like, how have you seen the movie?
It's not very cinematic.
Like, it's much like a TV episode. It's like Joss Whedon did Buffy, but with the Avengers. Like,
man, you know,
guys,
this is why I stopped reading Ain't It Cool, because they have things against specific people.
They really are a very unhappy website a lot of the time.
There's that, but they have vendettas against specific people, and I forget who it was, but I mean. I think they ate their words on X-Men First Class. I think that might have been one of them where they were just like, this is going to suck, this is going to suck, this is going to suck. And then, I guess it didn't suck. We didn't say it was going to suck, did we? No. They aggravate me. That and Harry Knowles is his... from a writing standpoint, the way that he just goes on and on and on in his introductions before ever getting to the meat of his reviews.
Yeah.
And, like, I understand putting a little bit of personal stuff in there, a little bit of personality. Ebert certainly does that from time to time, but in a very good way. Of course, he's got a lot more talent, and he's got a lot more years on Harry Knowles. But
actually, on kind of a side note, sort of related, but somebody wrote to me today with a submission for an album, and they were like, I really like your reviewing style. I'm like, wow, that's weird. Mm-hmm. But they're like, you know, it's really unpretentious and like unfussy, and you know, it's, and I'm like, yeah. What you mean to say is that it's plain and uninteresting. I'm glad you like it. Just go. Take my crayons and go write another review.
Oh.
Jerk.
I think they were trying to be complimentary.
Yeah, no, it's... I'm sure it was meant in a positive way, right. But I was kind of like, wow, those are not the words I was necessarily going for. Mm. But, yeah, it is actually really difficult on that side, because every now and again I want to say something personal.
Yeah.
You know, you do. Right. But I'm like, I don't know. I don't want to like go too far off. This isn't my old website.
Right, yeah, no, I see where you're
going
from.
Tell a story in the middle of the review. Yeah. But every now and again, I'm tempted.
So, what was your what was your favorite moment in the Avengers trailer? Because I've been asking everyone that I... And in fact, so like I watched it the 6 or 7 times on Wednesday, and then Thursday I went down to the salt mine... And on break, I was showing some colleagues the.
How do you guys get internet down there?
It's a complicated process. There's a lot of tin cans and wire involved.
Yeah, right.
Each person I showed it to, I asked him or her what their favorite moment was. So what was yours?
It's difficult to pin down to like a specific moment, but mm-hmm. I would say that like the trailer. Seem to really emphasize, I mean, okay, this is going to sound really stupid, but bear with me. The trailer, like, seemed to really build up the fact that this was a team that mm-hmm. had, you know, reservations, but had come together and worked very well as a team, which is a trope that we're familiar with, but, like, there's a moment where Iron Man gets hit by something and Hulk jumps up and catches him.
Yes,
and
yes.
You know, just stuff like that where mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, you know, like, if there were a superhero team, that's what they should do.
Exactly.
You know? I mean... It felt good watching it.
We were, kind of a tangent. That is my favorite moment. The Hulk leaping into the air and grabbing Iron Man. Because it's the two characters interacting in a very real team way. I love that they're kind of dysfunctional and we see them fighting and whatnot.
Yeah.
But absolutely, yes, that's a team thing. Which brings me to this, tangent. In class today, we were talking about... Bear with me. We were talking about this story called The Dungeon Master. It's from Best American Short Stories 2011. I forget the author's name. Sam Lipsyth, maybe. I don't know. Anyway.
Right.
It's one of the... I've not read any stories where they're talking about... Dungeons and Dragons, right? But he perfectly captures what it's like to be part of part of a gaming group, and not necessarily the cool gaming group.
Right.
And then he perfectly captures what it's like to be on a campaign. So anyway, that makes me thinking about, like, if we were putting an old... We used to play Heroes Unlimited for the folks out there.
Books are sitting right there.
Yeah, it was Palladium Games' version of a superhero RPG. And if we were playing a game, like, that's the sort of thing that would happen. Like, that's when you'd team up. You know, I'm going to leap into the air, and I'm gonna, like, that's that kind of moment, right?
Yeah. I'm going to shoot magic missile, and your backpack is going to catch it. Set on fire. Which is a little more my speed, but yeah, I'm with you.
But like, it feels like the kind of authentic moment... I mean, you definitely saw some of that in the X-Men movies, which is really the only other team
but
movie
actually,
you can point
at. If you think back to it, like, that whole business where they're out, the Statue of Liberty, like, yeah, they're together a little bit, but they all split up.
Yeah.
Like, you always see those characters doing their character thing
yeah.
off by themselves, and usually it's just Storm by herself.
Right,
you know,
yeah.
Going, oh, I'll do lightning.
Yeah.
And then she goes away.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's a team, but...
Yeah, but you don't see them together. And what I'm thinking, like in X-Men First Class, you did see a scene where Banshee comes out of nowhere and rescues Havoc.
True.
But, like, there's not too much of that in the superhero team movies we've seen. And in just this one trailer, we get the Hulk grabbing Iron Man out of midair. We've got the 4, 5, 6 of them standing back to back. We've got numerous shots of Cap and Thor standing next to each other. You know, it looks like...
Do you think the Iron Man kids are ever going to consummate their relationship?
I don't know. there'd be a demigod that would come out of that, right?
Burt back Asgard. I could go in for that. I could watch that.
Oh, that would be that. There's somebody's gonna come up with that.
That'd be an entertaining film.
Awkward but entertaining. Yeah. They have a lot of respect for each other in the books. Those two, it's true,
which is impressive considering that hat that Thor wears. Although Cap had a hat too, so
Cap did have. They both had wings on them.
They probably bonded over their poor fashion sense.
Yeah, honestly.
Either that, or they're like, why isn't everyone doing this?
That's honestly the only thing I have to complain about the Avengers trailer. Is I'm not a huge fan of the Captain America costume. The headpiece for the most part, just the way that it's constructed is not what I mean. Given, because the headpiece, the head part of the costume in Cap the First Avenger was good. It all made sense. He's wearing a helmet. Everything came together. I'm not a huge fan of that costume. It's growing on me, but it's I am a big fan of the way that they have made the Hulk way more a reflection of whoever's playing Bruce Banner.
True.
So, like, that face is very obviously his... Why am I forgetting the actor's name? Jeremy Renner. No, Jeremy Renner's playing Hawkeye. The other guy.
We'll call him Shemp.
Mark Ruffalo.
There we go.
It's very obviously Mark Ruffalo's face. And so it gives him... a lot more personality.
Well, motion capture in general has gotten a lot better in that regard, too. Yeah. Like, you had a similar thing with Avatar, where clearly it was their faces.
And actually,
the One Ring .net had a new Hobbit video yesterday, a production video.
Yeah, I watched that last night.
It's great. And, you see Andy Serkis for a moment, and you're like, huh, you really are Gollum.
Yeah. Not to get distracted from our comics conversation, but, like, I'm really interested in that movie, especially in the fact that Serkis is doing, he's director of the second unit, which is really interesting. Like, some of the stuff that he's out there shooting, and that he's that involved, he just seems like a really creative individual who I'd want to be a big part of whatever.
That movie is going to be awesome. I have enormous faith and trust in Peter Jackson, and at this point, they could do the Silmarillion, and I would go watch it, all 10 parts.
So what's your feeling on that part? Because I mentioned to people, and sort of casual fans of those books and of that mythology, will talk about, like, how are you going to make that two movies? Why are you making that two movies? What's your feeling on why make it two movies?
Well, there's a lot of good reason to make it two. I mean, if you just stick to the actual Hobbit itself and you don't delve into any of the appendices or any of the related material, then, yeah, okay, it feels like it should just be one long movie.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of related stuff.
Yeah.
During the whole time that the dwarves are off doing their thing with Bilbo... Saruman is kind of helping out because the necromancer, who is someone that we will come to know very well later on, has been seen in the Mirkwood.
Mm-hmm.
Is it the Mirkwood? I think it's the Mirkwood. Nerds, help me out. Nora will know. Mm-hmm. Gandalf has to go off and kind of deal with that.
Yeah.
And there's different councils that are going on that are dealing with other problems.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think what they're going to do is just incorporate a lot of those problems.
Yeah.
Which is cool, because, on the one hand, they're still going to tell the Hobbit story, and they're going to give you a very complete Hobbit story.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, they're also going to, give you some of that rich backstory, which, when you take it all as a whole with the Lord of the Rings, is going to be great.
Yeah.
Because it's suddenly going to add a new dimension to the Lord of the Rings films. I'm total faith and trust.
Yeah.
Peter Jackson could have said, I'm going to do this in 12 parts, and, I'd go every time for the extended edition.
Are those... speaking of extended edition, when it comes to those movies, the theatrical release is only just a part of it. The theatrical release is almost like... This is going to sound bad. Like, it's almost an extended trailer. Because it's not until you get that extended... Like, I can't watch, and I have not tried to watch, the normal versions of the Lord of the Rings movies since the extended versions came out. Like, it's like that with Almost Famous. Yeah. I can't watch Almost Famous... the original cut, I have to watch the untitled cut. And and I've seen Watchmen, the ultimate cut, which has everything put into it, including Tales of the Black Freighter. And I can't imagine watching the theatrical.
Right.
So
oh, I should ask you about the Watchmen prequels in a minute. But yeah, no, I hear you. Like, I mean, I've seen all the extended versions. Mm. You know, I've listened to every single commentary.
Yeah.
They're all interesting, even the ones that are like the guys who do the sculpting.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen every bit of extra footage. Mm. And
Stephanie's done all of that. Basically, those extended editions were her Christmas presents the years that they came out. And I love the movies. I have not delved into the appendices yet.
Oh, totally do.
Yeah.
Because there's so much. These guys are just, I've said this before, I'm sure here, but they're my heroes. I mean, you see these guys and they're like, you know, they're in Rohan and they're building Edoras and they're like, okay, so behind this wall, this is never in the movie, no actors enter or exit here, but we kind of felt that what this building should have is this carving, so we made this sculpture and then we fitted all these things into it, and we then we thought we had to get the costume people to make some cloaks and things, because if people came in here, they'd have cloaks and things, so we put these beautiful cloaks here. Yeah. This is never on camera, but it's for the actors. And you're just like, wow.
Yeah.
You love what you're doing so much that I wish I had that much passion about anything. I really do. So those guys are officially my heroes.
Yeah. I mean, that's why I can't go watch a great movie, see a great play, go to a great concert without walking out and having that feeling of like, I need to be better at whatever I'm doing.
It's true.
I aspire to that level of passion.
It's amazing. I love it. And they're always so like happy.
Yeah.
Like, I get to do this insane thing.
Yeah.
I'm just like, God, you're living the dream.
Yeah.
So Watchmen prequels. Alan Moore has said they're evil.
Well, I'm not as far, like, I'm not on Alan Moore's side by any stretch of the imagination. I think the guy is kind of nuts. But I am not on DC's side at all. I mean, this is exploitation of, I understand they're a business, they're doing what they're
gonna do. It feels weird, though. Because the movie wasn't a smash.
No, the movie wasn't a smash, but it's one of their like key property. Like it's not just one of the greatest graphic novels of all time, but people talk about it as a great novel.
It is pretty great.
And I think, you know, I understand they want to exploit that property, but I just don't think I don't think you can do it justice. Yeah. I think there's a certain point at which and I'm all for, like, I'm doing two independent studies with students who are doing linked short fiction. My advanced short fiction class is almost becoming a linked short fiction class. I'm huge into shared universes and big stories and exploiting all of that, but it's not that I think it's sacred, but it feels like the sort of thing that was complete, you know?
It does, yeah. I mean, the story has an ending, and it's a good ending. And,
And it's not like there isn't extra material in the book. I mean, there's that stuff that appears between chapters, dossiers, and and written stuff. I mean, there's plenty of material there.
You know, so much of the kind of greatness of that graphic novel in general is that it takes a lot of really unexpected twists. Mm. And with a prequel, there can be unexpected plot twists, but you always know how it's going to end up.
Hmm. Well, here's a question for you. When was the last time you read, watched, whatever, a great prequel? I mean, X-Men First Class, we talked about that.
Okay, yeah.
Well, but that's almost a...
Well, it sure wasn't Wolverine.
Hmm.
That movie.
I mean, like the Star Wars prequels, like things like that. Like I admitted to you beforehand. I watch movies or have movies on in the background while I exercise in the morning. And
Star Wars prequels.
And so I started off with the Star Wars prequels, and I wanted to sort of watch the whole thing. And I'm not as down on them as everyone else is. But one thing I was sitting there and thinking about is like, and Patton Oswalt makes a great bit about, like, I don't care where the stuff I came from. I just love the stuff that I love. And that is a movie that... those are a set of movies that don't have a really great dramatic narrative purpose except to sort of fill in blanks that don't need filling in. right? Like, that's what the Watchmen prequels are kind of trying...
The world did not need midichlorians, George.
No, it didn't. And then it doesn't need... Like, the Clone Wars are an amazing... And I understand. I've been told that the TV series, the cartoons, are not that bad. That they are...
No. The people I live with have been watching them pretty much nonstop. And sometimes they sound interesting, but
I don't know. But I mean, like, the concept of the Clone Wars is really interesting. Did we need to see the way that happened? You know, the concept of Anakin as a great pilot is interesting. Now, I think you could make one really great prequel out of everything that's in those three movies with different actors, with different, not, you know what, and sometimes I think those actors...
No Jar Jar, less CGI.
Yeah. Like, Natalie Portman is a great actress. She's just not given great direction.
She can rock that catsuit. But
and the cuts are not in her favor. Just the way that it's structured is not in her favor.
It's just there are so many unlikable things. But I think honestly, where it went wrong for me is that everything that happens from the time they find Anakin, until the end of that, is about grand things, large groups of people, big armies, tons of troopers, tons of robots, tons of Gungans. Yeah. And it's really hard to ever get to know these people, to care about them, to see them develop.
Yeah. The size, he gets so obsessed with the size of the canvas that he's got he doesn't remember that it's really about, like, that corner.
And those battlefield scenes are just video games. That's all they are. You know, they're just, it's just a shoot 'em up.
Yeah.
That's not
compelling. I mean, that's no better example of that than what I just watched yesterday morning, which is the climactic sequence of Attack of the Clones, where there are bits of dialogue, it almost feels like cut scenes between and I don't play a lot of video games, but
it's true though.
They feel like they're there just for a moment so that the next part of the video game can load.
And it's true, and it's just, it's not compelling. Yeah. You know, after your 10th fight scene in the first half hour, it's kind of like, oh, guess a shit.
And it's especially, and I understand, like I said, I'm not as down on them as everyone else.
I've seen them all exactly once.
Mm. I can appreciate them on a certain level. But the way that his revisionism has, is that a word? That's not a word. The way that his desire to revise has come in and kind of ruined parts of the original movies too, it's the same problem. He sees something. I mean, you're talking about the grand scope of the prequels, right? What's great about the original ones is that despite the fact that it's this space drama, about four or five characters.
The fight scenes are purposeful in the real trilogy. You know, they're happening because something important is happening. They're not incidental to the story.
Yeah.
They're not precipitated by the Trade Federation. I mean, really, you know what it was? I saw Return of the Jedi at the drive-in in 1983.
Mm-hmm.
And from that moment on, there was no new Star Wars until 99.
Yeah.
And in that time, as I grew to love and see these movies, they became an obsession, not just for me, but for lots of geeks.
Yeah.
Like, wow, man, if they made more movies, they could do this and this thing. And I heard a rumor that George Lucas talked about this, and then he said he might do that. And they were the most amazing, epic thing ever. And I got there, and the music started, and I was so excited. And then the crawl started, and I'm like, the Trade Federation?
Yeah. But what?
Who gives a shit? And then there's two aliens, and you're just like, is this a joke?
Yeah.
Is this like a Pixar thing before the real movie? Mm-hmm. Is it funny?
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean...
I hate this so much.
Yeah. It's... I'm not going to try to keep defending them for what little value they have.
Go ahead. Defend the Trade Federation.
No. What I was going to say is his problem with... And this will all circle back, I guess. I mean... He sees that he has this huge canvas now of all these things he can do, and he forgets the rules that he learned in the first place. And the one scene that's sticking out, Chris, get to the point, is that scene in A New Hope where Han runs down the hallway And in the original version, it's like a couple of stormtroopers.
Yeah, it's like five or six.
You know, and then with each new edition of the movie, it's more and more and more stormtroopers standing there. And it's just, like, I understand where I understand his motivation.
10,000 of them at one point, where he's like, that's not even physically possible.
Like, I understand the motivation to, like, clean up the print, make the effects better in some cases. Sure. Like, I actually like the fact that the X-Wings get a little bit more movement.
Fine. But, you know.
Personal taste. But
they didn't, like, replace them with dragons, you know?
Yeah, well, you want to talk about replacing the other. Think about what Spielberg did. And I think he's since reversed it. But what he did with the special edition of E.T. and they became walkie-talkies.
Yeah, and for those of you who may not have encountered this, when the FBI and the other people show up at the house to take E.T. away, it's scary. They've got guns.
Right.
And they're chasing them around with guns.
And then when it came out again, like the 20th or 25th anniversary,
walkie-talkies.
But I think he has since said...
Which is a little weird to see a guy with a walkie-talkie in a rumble day. But
I think he's since said that he regrets that more than any other decision he's ever made as a filmmaker. And then when the 30th anniversary came out or whatever...
Yeah, it's been fixed.
It's been fixed.
I was really worried the other day because they said, you know, they're re-releasing Indiana Jones on Blu-ray. And I was like, oh, God.
Yeah.
What's he going to do to those?
Well, I don't think he can... And it seems like he hasn't touched Indy.
Well, he said that, like, they had to go back to the original print. And they had, you know, they had this opportunity to redo everything. And I was like, oh. But he said, you'll be happy to know I haven't changed anything.
Yeah.
I've just made it a little brighter, fixed the color, and you're good to go.
Right.
Like, so good. Thank you.
So, all right. So you mentioned something about the buildup from 83 through 99 of...
I mean, there were so many moments at scout camp at lunch where it was just like, oh my God. They have to do this right now.
Right.
This is going to be the best thing ever.
Yeah.
You know? And it was always going to be just next year the dude was going
to
start.
Yeah. So you mentioned that buildup. And to bring us back to we'll eventually get to... There was something else we were going to talk about. The idea of the buildup. So we have buildup for... you know, if you're a longtime Marvel fan, you've got buildup for something like the Avengers.
Sure.
What makes those movies, or what makes this movie, I don't know, less likely to disappoint? I mean, is it, or that's not even quite the question I want to ask. It's, you know, what's the difference between the buildup that we feel for something like that, a transition from comics to these comics we adored as kids over to a movie versus the buildup of Star Wars, the likelihood to disappoint.
Well, there's less Star Wars, right? Like, right. I mean, despite the fact that it's a huge marketing juggernaut, never really went away from the public consciousness. I mean, there's less of it. You know, there's the three movies.
Right.
And it was exciting, right, when you first heard, oh, special editions are coming out with new stuff. Yeah. Wow. And then you got there and you're like, what the hell is that? That's Jabba? What the hell is that?
Yeah.
You know, but... And also, how did Jabba eat that much in that amount of time to get... Whatever. So, you know, it was exciting, but I mean, that's what there was. There were novels. And anybody who hasn't read Timothy Zahn's Last Command trilogy should go read it, because it's astonishingly good. If you were disappointed by the prequels, go read that trilogy. Timothy Zahn... You know, Heir to the Empire, Dark Force Rising, and Last Command. Amazing. They're probably a little bit better than some Jedi. So, yeah, no, so good. You know, you had the books, and, you know, some comics. Some of the Dark Horse Star Wars titles I used to collect were really good. But that's it, right?
Yeah.
But comics... In general, like, if you're just a Marvel fan and you hear, oh, a Thor movie is coming out, you know, it's kind of like, well, all right, it could be good, it might not be good. And that book might be really special, it might be your favorite book every month. But you can still go read Thor, there'll be more Thor. You know, you don't have to wait for another Thor movie to get more Thor.
So, is scarcity of the source material, like, so scarcity of source material can either be amazing for the adaptation or really bad for the adaptation. So, like, we had such high expectations for Star Wars, it disappointed us so much.
I mean, okay.
We have such high expectations for Lord of the Rings, and when he knocks it out of the park, that makes those movies...
I'm sure right now, I'm entirely confident that The Hobbit is perfect, whatever it is.
And, you know, then we get something like The Avengers, and it's like, well, there's so much source material. There are great Avengers runs and terrible Avengers runs. And it's like, well, we expect it'll be a good movie because of Joss Whedon and because the characters are fun and interesting. But the potential for a letdown, it's probably pretty high because, you know, like who thought they'd ever get this many good actors and this many great characters in one piece?
I never expected to care about Iron Man. Not ever, not one bit. And that first Iron Man movie came out, and I was just like, whoa.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
Yeah.
So much so, he says.
So much so, he says.
I got this crazy DVD version of it. I didn't realize this was going to happen, and it came with an Iron Man mask.
Nice.
Which I should make Chris wear and put on the website. I just wanted a DVD version of Iron Man, but I got one that came with a mask.
With a mask.
So apparently I really liked it. Actually, I guess it gets on your wall.
Oh yeah, it's not a full on.
So there you are.
That's pretty cool. I see, you know, the forgotten movie of all of this. I love Iron Man, but the same summer, and this is what started the whole Avengers craze. You know, it was awesome. We were gonna, oh my goodness, Nick Fury's at the end of the Iron Man movie, and then the Incredible Hulk comes out, and Tony Stark shows up in the bar at the end of the movie.
The Hulk movie was kind of disappointing.
Well, are you talking about the Ang Lee Hulk or the Incredible Hulk?
Fair point. The one with Edward Norton. Yeah.
Yeah. The one with Edward Norton, I really like that one. The Ang Lee one is terrible.
Well, the Norton one, I'm sorry if you like it and you guys like it, but the first half is pretty good.
Hmm.
And then the second half is kind of...
It's
a different movie.
To be clear, like, what really sells it for me is, the second half is weaker. What sells it for me is the first 30 minutes. The first act of that movie is, like, the best Incredible Hulk TV show episode ever.
And then the rest of it is like, a Matrix sequel. you know what, listener? They sucked. They're in Star Wars prequel territory.
Yeah. But, well, again, scarcity of the original, right?
The Matrix should have been left alone.
Yeah.
That end of the third one could not come fast enough. I just remember sitting in the cinema thinking, oh, for love of God, just
kill them. Did you think of walking out?
Just kill them already. Well, it wasn't Lawnmower Man 2.
Well, the previous time I had seen, and this is why I didn't watch The Matrix for the longest time, the previous time I had seen a Keanu Reeves cyberpunk movie was Johnny Mnemonic, and I've probably told them.
I mean,
podcast
to be fair, I think that movie gets done in by its script. Mm. Like, more than anything, I think just the adaptation of the source is just so poor.
I have not finished.
And Gibson had a very famous public fight with the studio during that phase.
Okay. Well, that movie was me, my brother, I remember this day way too clearly. My brother had gotten... I was about to graduate high school. My brother had gotten beaten up on the way back from... Because it was a fire drill, which I wouldn't have been there for, where somebody had set fire to something in the art room, I think, maybe. Anyway, so everyone gets let out early.
I'm sorry. It was just some pain.
My brother gets beat up, and a couple of friends... female friends, which is not important in the story, but we come over, or they suggest that we all hang out to cheer me up, because my brother's hospital, but not terrible, whatever. So we go out, and we decide to go to see a movie, and I don't know why they invited me over on this particular day. It was one of those friends' younger brother's birthday, I think. Anyway, so his friends were all over, and they were all going to go see a movie. So me and the two girls go, and we go see a movie.
Who did you go with?
It was with.
Since you've said it enough times now that it's weird.
Yeah, no, it was with Diana and Megan.
Okay, all right.
So.
Oh, right, we're not supposed to mention Megan's name.
Oh, gosh. Now I've made...
Well, we haven't said her second name.
Yeah, I know. All right, well, so I don't have to bleep it?
I think we're okay.
That's a hell of a lot of work.
That's a whole other story.
Anyway, so the two of them and I go to the movies, and Diana's little brother goes to the movies with all of his friends, and they all show up, and they all want to see Johnny Mnemonic. And I, the 17-year-old of the bunch,
wow,
buy tickets for everyone.
And they let you?
This is my recollection. I bought tickets for everyone because the kid, the brother, and all the friends got dropped off. So it was like, I buy tickets for everyone. We all go into the theater. And I may be misremembering this, but we all go into the theater and we sit down and we start watching it. And who shows up behind us but Ken Mills?
Wow.
And his friend Adam.
Wow.
And they are getting on the girl's nerves. So, and the movie is not good. So we leave, and her little brother, Diana's little brother, and all the friends stay. This is my recollection. Again, well, I might be wrong. So we leave, we go back to Diana's house, and we watch Hard Day's Night. So when later on my future brother-in-law was like, you've got to see The Matrix, and you were like, you got to see The Matrix, and everyone was like, you got to watch The Matrix. I said, no.
And then you started and went, whoa.
I did. And my first viewing of The Matrix was in the basement of my wife's great-grandparents' house. This man and woman were nearly 90 at this point, and they come down and watch it with us.
They're like, we know Kung Fu.
I loved them, and that they came down and watched The Matrix with us.
That movie was so good. It was everything I had ever wanted a dystopian cyberpunk movie
to be. It's a fantastic movie.
It was perfect.
There's nothing wrong with that movie.
And I was super excited for a sequel. Like, whoa, a sequel. Mm-hmm. Oh, hang on.
Yeah.
You know. And then, yeah, some of the second one is, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's
going in an uncomfortable direction.
Yeah. Because I like to see stories finish out regardless of how terrible they are, that's why I'll watch the prequels.
We don't need to watch the prequels to see how the story ends.
see how the story begins.
The story begins very, very simply and very straightforwardly on the Senator's consulship. we don't actually need to, the story begins with Vader capturing Leia.
Oh, okay.
And the droids going out in escape hatch. That's where the story begins.
Okay.
Nothing
happened before that. Okay. All right.
Well, it's just, you know, even people who like it, when you're like, all right, tell me one really great thing about the prequels, nothing comes out of their mouth. Go ahead, do it.
One
thing that is equivalent to either Han shooting Greedo
mm-hmm.
first, or, I don't know, let's say... the attack on Hoth.
Although it doesn't meet, it doesn't meet necessarily what I expected.
One moment where that first time you watched Empire, where you heard there is another, and you're like, "What? There's another?"
Okay. There are parts of the third movie. There are parts of Revenge of the Sith that I adore. But I adore in spite of their flaws, because they come very close to what I imagined as a kid. I dig the revelation that the conflict between, you've got Anakin, you've got Sidious, and you've got Mace Windu. And that's the first step towards him becoming Vader. I kind of like what happens in terms of the assault on the Jedi Temple. There's stuff there where, like, it's so, those scenes could be amazing if the emotional investment had been there, if the acting, the emotional investment had been better over the first part of the movie, the first and the two movies that preceded it, those moments could be amazing.
Yeah, the assault on the temple is kind of a wow, that was a really dark scene for a Star Wars movie, sure.
And I dig, although not the melodramatic head flop, when Anakin is in Attack of the Clones, when Anakin is in the tent with the sand of the sand people.
He slaughtered them all.
Well, no, not that moment. The moment where
I would punch him in the nuts at that point.
The moment where his mother has just died, and it's more John Williams at this point than anything else. And his mother has just died, and Hayden Christensen looks up, and there's a look in his eye where he gets it right.
Yeah.
There's the first glimpse of Vader. And so there's that moment, and then there's a moment, I can't recall specifically where it is in...
He's slaughtered them.
I'm just going into Tashi didn't get some power converters.
Girl.
I mean, they had to explain where Luke's whininess comes from.
Oh, he's so awful.
The other moment is in Revenge of the Sith, and there's because of the way they've styled Christensen's hair at that moment, he looks like Vader even without the helmet. And it's not the yellow eyes, it's just a look prior even to the lava planet and everything. So, again, all of those come with caveats, so I haven't really answered your question.
Because you can't. I mean, I will say that Ewan McGregor, despite the fact that he's been put into a world of misery, it does a very nice job.
Yeah. Ewan is, especially in movies 2 and 3, I'm not as crazy about what he's doing in Phantom Menace, but that's just because...
But that movie centers around a 10-year-old, so who cares?
Yeah. But anyway, so what does...
Also, Jar Jar Binks sold.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is that, like, Lucas explains Jar Jar, and he's like, well, the movie has to appeal to children. And Jar Jar is very accessible. Like, well, you weren't worried about that in the first trilogy, and it was awesome.
Yeah.
Children loved that.
R2, C-3PO?
You know, but they weren't Jar Jar.
No, what I'm saying is, when you try to make a kid something that appeals to kids, you very often fail.
I mean, it's like, you know, we've put shiny thing in this movie, I'm going to rattle it at you. Yeah. But what really galls me is just... Mm. The moments where silence would work very well in those movies, like, he always feels the need to put Jar Jar or to do something stupid. Like, okay, so at the end of that third one, you know, Vader wakes up for the first time as Vader.
Right.
And it's like out of a bad Frankenstein high school play.
Yeah.
No.
Well, yeah.
And now they've put that into the third, you know, the real third movie.
Yeah. No,
and it's just like, oh, come on.
Yeah.
You know, are people too stupid to realize it's the same Vader? Like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
And, but there are so many other ways that he could have, like, shown his, you know, terror or his frustration.
He already does. I mean, this is the problem with
sort
all...
Sort of lurching awkwardly off a platform.
The problem with all of the
extra in a thriller video.
The problem with all of them is that he does too much at every turn. So, like, look at... Again, I mean, Hayden Christensen, not the best actor in the world. Better than I think some people give him credit for.
I would have actually been happier with Adam Sandler in that movie, alright?
Ugh, Adam Sandler. Yeah.
Anyway. At least we'd have a good reason to be mad, as opposed to, like, you're just not doing anything.
Hmm.
You just... What are you doing?
The moments... During when they're putting Vader together, there are moments on Christensen's face, especially just before the helmet comes down, where he's doing a lot of the work there of that Lucas then feels like he needs to redo in terms of the terror. Now, why not let as poor an actor as he might have been, why not let him sell that moment facially, where he gets revealed to him
the acting.
Yeah, as opposed to, as you say, overdramatic, straight out of a thriller video movements.
It's just bad.
Yeah.
I tell you, man, when I have kids, I don't care. They want to see that crap, they can see it on their own time.
Yeah. Right? Not in your house.
When they're 18 and they're not living at home, and they go to college and they're experimenting with other things.
Right.
Although, seriously, at that point, I might be like, Wow, Phantom Menace, have you tried marijuana? Because have you had a lot of sex yet? That might be a better way to go.
So, rounding back to the beginning, the Avengers, sort of high expectations now based on what we've seen. It seems like it's going to be good, but because we've got Whedon and we've got Robert Downey Jr. and everything we've seen seems to be good.
A side note, speaking of Joss Whedon, this week I was very sick. I was in bed for like 3 days. Mm. I queued up the Netflix and finally watched Buffy.
Wow.
I had never, ever watched
Was it fun?
It's been pretty good. Mm. It gets better. Yeah. The first few episodes, I was kind of like, wow. I saw the very first episode of Buffy with my first girlfriend at her house, at Missy's house. And then I was like, okay, I watched the girl show. I was kind of rewarded for it. I'm done. But yeah, actually, after Firefly, I was curious, but then I was kind of like, ooh, that's a lot of TV show.
Yeah.
But since I was stuck in bed for 3 days.
Right.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Although, I just started the fourth season, and Buffy has reached college.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping to regain my passion. Maybe I've seen too much this week, but her character sort of changes from strong girl who does things to, I hope boys like me in college.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
So well, I mean, that will pick up again.
It's probably victim to the WB formula of like, because well, at that point was it WB, CW? I don't even know. Anyway, I don't have any experience with it, so I can't really comment.
It was probably LVI.
Yeah. So, Avengers.
Right.
What does it have to do to sort of meet your expectations, and what does it have to do to exceed your expectations? I guess. How does it sort of, I mean, it's never going to approach Lord of the Rings territory or Star Wars territory, the original Star Wars territory.
I really thought that for the longest part of my life, Star Wars would remain my true cinematic love, but no, it's the Lord of the Rings trilogy. Those are the best movies ever made. Mm.
It's not going to approach any of those things. But how does it, probably not even going to approach our affection for Nolan's Batman movies, but how does it succeed?
I don't know. I mean, for me, you know, if what it really delivers is, you know, a team focused movie where the story is about developing the kind of character of a team, in a way that's, you know, entertaining, then great, good, done. Where it will fail is if it's kind of like Thor, or if it's kind of like even parts of Captain America, where it becomes about a lot of different stuff, and it never, or you know, X-Men 2 or X-Men 3, where it becomes about a million different things, and it never really gets it together. But I don't feel like that's Joss Whedon's, you know, I think he'll be good, you know, because he delivers very well in teamwork. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, Firefly and Serenity are very much an ensemble, and he does ensembles well. Buffy is an ensemble, and he's doing it well, and you know, that's his territory, and I think in a lot of ways that's why he's a smart choice to direct it. So, yeah, I mean, I think as long as he sticks to his own kind of style and his own strengths, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's it. The only thing I'm worried about, only thing I'm worried about is two villains, and it's the thing I worry about with.
Well, if they're working together, it's all right.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure that there are two villains. It's just there's Loki, and then there's whatever the hell that thing is that follows Iron Man around the around the corner of the building. They're aliens, I think, but...
But they've said that the Skree aren't going to be part of it.
Yeah. I think the Skrulls and the Kree...
Skrulls, sorry.
Yeah. They both belong to whoever has the Fantastic Four rights.
So annoying.
Like, it's very annoying that they've sold off some of their rights to some things and some of the rights to others.
Although apparently Jack Kirby's estate is calling for everyone to boycott the Avengers because Jack Kirby didn't get enough money. Mm. Now, look, okay, this is a very long, complicated story. I'm not going to get into it, but what I will say is that, you know, dude helped create a lot of really great characters, did a lot of art that was very, very synonymous with comics for a long time.
Yep.
Worked for both DC and Marvel. Was a big dude. But left Marvel twice, and was paid for his work.
Right.
There was a bit of a lawsuit, a bit of bad blood, but it got solved. And the argument they have put forth, the Kirby estate, is that, well, but Marvel then went on to make a ton of money in, you know, movies and TV, and they never gave Jack Kirby any of that money.
Yeah.
Well, they didn't have to. He didn't work on them, and he wasn't under contract for them.
Right.
He didn't own the rights to them.
Right.
So, and it even says, like, don't you think it's, you know, bad form or immoral or something to that effect to not reward the creator when you have this huge success? Now, yeah, that might be true, but it's capitalist.
Yeah.
And, you know, why would they, you know, go and pay his estate a huge amount of money when they don't have to? I mean, yeah, okay, you know, whatever argument you want to make about it, it's pretty ridiculous, and it's pretty flimsy grounds for a boycott.
Yeah, I don't know. People find reasons to boycott anything, and sometimes the reasons are good, sometimes they're bad. I'm with you. I think, you know, you sign a contract, you're bound by you're bound by the contract, and I think it's sad some of the contracts that these guys had to sign, and you know, obviously they went on later life and they inspired people like the Image guys to go out there and create their own characters, and there's been a wave of successful indie publishers since.
You should, as a side note, you should actually, and anybody should. I found on Netflix the other day, there was a Kevin Smith interviews Stan Lee. Like, it was two videos.
Yeah.
And it was really great. Yeah. It was really great because Stan is there talking about, like, the earliest days of comics and what it was really like.
Yeah.
And all the Jack Kirby stuff is kind of in there, too. And
yeah.
It's actually really great and
illuminating. And if you guys haven't read The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay by Michael Chabon, definitely worth worth checking out in terms of comic book.
I'm never sure how to pronounce his name.
I think it's Chabon. I think I looked it up, and it's that.
For a while, I've been calling him Sharon for no reason. I thought he was the guardian of the underworld. My bad.
Yeah, you know.
But okay.
So that's a good place to wrap up.
We just kind of rambled about comics. So
that's, I mean, you know, when you're doing three episodes in a row, you gotta talk about
we're
something.
We're out of material. Can you tell?
We're not out of material. We got, look, on this list of things
that
we are...
We didn't talk about the fact that the world was ending.
We did not, but we'll talk about it next week. Because next week, well...
Is the world going to end by then?
Next week, the night that we would normally record this is the premiere, so maybe we'll have to record it early.
Go see Chris's play. Tell them about your play.
Yeah, there's an evening of apocalyptic theater is opening up next Friday, what the heck date is that? 9th, maybe?
Yeah.
At the Players Ring, and it includes, among other things, a play I'm directing called Bad Dogs, and a play I wrote called Apocalypse Anonymous.
Nice.
And a whole
bunch
of... Where
can they get tickets? Or can they get them at the Players
Ring? Get them at the ring, playersring.org, it's all the benefit charities. So, yeah, I mean, there's a whole bunch we didn't talk about.
Go there. I'll be there. Chris will be there.
Yeah.
It'll be awesome.
It's going to be fun.
All right, so that's GOAT for this week.
That's GOAT for this week.
See you later, guys.
See ya.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it.